This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm T. Xiao Yik, together with Tina Carmelia and Sharmila Gunnison in the studio. On the show, we examine some local and international news through the bigger picture lens. Here are today's stories.
Speakers at the recent Indian Science Congress claimed that Einstein and Newton were wrong, an ancient demon king had planes, and that India had been making test tube babies for thousands of years. How did a prestigious science platform end up spouting pseudoscientific ideas?
On our second story, would you pay £700 so that your child can walk out alongside his or her football hero before a big match? We look at the practice of some Premier League clubs profiteering from sky-high mascot fees.
You can join the conversation on Twitter where we have a poll. Would you pay for your kid to walk out on the pitch with their favourite footballer? Yes, no, or you pay for yourself. Tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018789.
Before we get to the stories, though, here's The Life of Riley by The Lightning Seeds.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to the Daily Digest. That was The Life of Riley by The Lightning Seeds, a song that the BBC used to play in its football programme Match of the Day in the 1990s. We'll be discussing football in our second story, and we have a poll on it.
Yeah, we're asking, would you pay for your kid to walk out on the pitch with their favourite footballer? Let us know. Yes, no, I'd rather pay for myself. Tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us to join the conversation at 018-789-8899.
But first, we'll be discussing how a prestigious science platform ended up spouting pseudoscientific ideas.
NPR and various other news publications reported that Dr. Kanan Jagathala Krishnan dismissed Albert Einstein's theory of relativity as a big blunder and claimed Isaac Newton had not understood gravity in full because he had been unable to explain gravitational repulsive force. Also, G. Negeswara Rao, a professor of inorganic chemistry, said that the 100 Kaurava siblings mentioned in the Indian epic Mahabharata were born using stem cell technology. Oh, I'm sorry, I can't keep a straight face reading this. He also claimed that Ravana, a demon god with 10 heads, had 24 kinds of aircraft of varying sizes and capacities. And Ashu Khosla, a paleontology expert, questionable, at Punjab University, claimed that dinosaurs were created by the Hindu god Brahma.
Wow.
These were only some of the statements made at a children's session of the recently held Indian Science Congress.
And, you know, in case you're wondering, this isn't some dubious kind of event. I mean, up till now anyway, because the Congress is an annual event that started in 1914, and its association actually boasts a membership of about 50,000 scientists, and approximately 15,000 scientists from India and around the world attend the event every year, including Nobel laureates. And in the past few years, however, the Congress has actually increasingly been used as a platform to propagate ancient Indian literature and religious teachings. The author of The Vedic People, Their History and Geography, Rajesh Kochar, wrote in his op-ed for the Indian Express that this trend was, quote-unquote, set by the Prime Minister, Science Minister and Chief Ministers. One of the highlights of every edition is that the inaugural session is presided over by the Prime Minister himself.
Many scientists also believe that politics is the problem. In 2016, Nobel laureate Venkatraman Ramakrishnan.
Oh, you did well.
Thank you. Called the event a circus because of the way religious ideologies seeped into the Congress and said he wouldn't attend another session. Now, is the rise of the Bharatiya Janata Party, which is Prime Minister Narendra Modi's party in 2014, which meant that the ideals of the organization that it's closely linked with, a right-wing group called the Rashtriya Swayam Seva Sang, I'll just stick to calling it the RSS, yeah, are now mainstream. So the RSS believes in propagating Hindutva as a nationalist movement. The term refers to the effort to establish a Hindu way of life and glorifying Hindu beliefs.
To help us understand this better, we have on the line Kamala Thyagarajan, who wrote the article for NPR. Kamala, there is a rise in the mixing of religious sentiments for political gains in India. Was the fiasco in the Indian Science Congress another example of this?
Yes, I do believe that it was exactly that. The Indian Science Congress is fully funded by India's Ministry of Science and Technology, and every year has been inaugurated by the Prime Minister. So there's no getting away from the fact that it has close ties with politics.
And as mentioned in your article, Kamala, this is not the first time the Indian Science Congress has served up religion instead of science. Why is it hard for India to separate the two?
Well, I wouldn't say it's hard for India to separate religion and science. If that were the case, we wouldn't be home to some of the most brilliant scientific minds of our era. In 2018 alone, Indian science and technology have done so much for development and progress. Indian scientists built an early warning system for landslide-affected areas, an aviation biofuel. They've created a portable reading machine for the visually impaired, built devices for the quick diagnosis of diseases such as tuberculosis and cervical cancer that affect millions of Indians. However, I think it's a problem when we take pride from an ancient past instead of looking at modern developments. At the end of the day, I don't think that science should be hijacked anymore for political gain. Technically, all of India is secular. It should remain that way in practice, too. And all of the scientists I spoke to felt that Hindu mythology is imaginative, beautiful, and that it has its time and place, but not in the field which depends on rational thinking and empirical learning. Empirical learning has been the backbone of science everywhere. And the scientists I spoke to need to get back to that. We need science to unite the country in progress.
That was Kamala Tyagarajan, a journalist based in India. She reports on a wide range of issues, including human rights, science, health and culture, and has byline for Al Jazeera, BBC, New York Times and NPR, among others.
And she makes actually some great points. India was one of the first countries outside of the Western Hemisphere to produce modern scientists, which is not surprising as the country has a long history of science and technology, even as early as the Indus Valley Civilization, which is from around 4,500 BC. This civilization had sophisticated irrigation and water management system. They had a standard system for measurements. They were the first to use the zero in arithmetic. And don't forget, the Indian Space Research Organization became only the fourth space agency in 2014 to reach Mars.
That's right. So now we turn to Sohini C., who wrote a similar article on this issue for South China Morning Post, titled Bowel Cleanse for Better DNA, The Nonsense Science of Modi's India. Sohini, the lines between religion and science are unfortunately very blurred in non-secular states. In your opinion, would you separate religion from science?
First of all, India is a secular nation. The word secularism is mentioned right in the preamble of our constitution. So we are not a non-secular state. We are officially a secular state. I presume the answer, and this is a simplistic answer, would be the first one I gave you, is the answer is good quality education. And good quality education should be able to teach science as science, and religion and faith and mythology as all important, but religions, myth and folklore, and these are different things. They are also important, but they are separate, and they don't mix with science.
How should India educate the youth, or rather anyone who is naive and gullible, to protect them from the falling for from falling for these dubious claims?
Well, I think the answer is obvious, and the answer is the same across the world: good education. And I think for a long time in our history, we were more or less on that path. I'm not saying we had fabulous education, but we were on the path towards meaningful education. But a lot of that has been derailed by the current BJP government, and some derailment also happened in the previous innings of the BJP government, which happened from approximately 99 to 2004, and they also had a brief period in 98. So some of these derailments happened then, the major derailments. I would not like to say that the other major party in India, the Congress, is a whole lot better in terms of its educational policy, but it is certainly slightly or it is better, not slightly, it is better than the BJP government in its temperament about science. So I think good education, and education which is not underlined by this philosophy of we have to make a claim about civilizational supremacy. So, I understand where this comes from. These are colonized countries. And so there is this great yearning to say that this colonization happened. It was an accident of history. We don't really deserve to be colonized. But making up stories about scientific achievements in ancient India is not the best way to correct this. It's actually the worst way.
That was Indian journalist Sohini C speaking to us about the pseudoscience that had infiltrated the Indian Science Congress and how the country can improve its science literacy. And she made a few good points about the post-colonial mindset and trying to maybe, in a way, overcompensate for that, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this, when I started reading these stories over the last couple of years, especially since the Modi government came into power, it's not unfamiliar to me, because I've heard versions of this growing up in an Indian family. I've heard versions of this that the idea of stem cell technology being present in Mahabharata, the idea of nuclear weapons having been discovered and there being evidence of it in our epics, they're not new. And I think in many ways it is a way to kind of reclaim some kind of past glory. But, you know, Sohini's article in South China Morning Post also makes a really good point that it's also a way to feed into this idea of glorifying the current Hindu nationalism that's rising in India by sort of positioning Hinduism as sort of having this past and this glorious past in the country, and therefore positioning everyone else, the Muslims, the Christians, as the others who somehow are not as... who has somehow have not achieved as much, who are not as worthy of belonging there. So I think there's a lot more going on here than just pseudoscience.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But how much of these views have actually gained traction, I'm wondering, because they do, I think perhaps to a neutral observer, they do seem very outlandish. But, you know, if we're talking about not pandering, but speaking to a population that's so diverse, that come from so many different educational backgrounds and income groups, I wonder how these ideas are fermenting in the minds of the people.
Mm. I think in Sohini's article itself, she draws on the example of going to a school where a school teacher actually discounts the achievements of Galileo because he feels that it doesn't talk about achievements from India enough. So I found that a very a good example. And as we see, you know, when we talk about how fake news spreads, or when we talk about people who don't want to vaccinate children, it doesn't take too much for these unfounded ideas to take root and to grow, especially if it feeds into a narrative that you already hold in your head.
I mean, of course, you know, it's not just the post-colonial societies that are grappling with this sort of how religion and science intersect. We know about the debate between creationism and evolution being taught in schools in the United States, and I guess they have a very different experience and narrative there.
So I would think, and you guys will probably, probably agree, because you do the Health and Living shows, is that for me, it's not about discounting religion, but I would say that at the end of the day, if you're talking about science, then it needs to follow that process, the research, the, the study, the experts corroborating evidence. And if all of those are not there, then they shouldn't be passing it off as fact. It's, for me, it's as simple as that. It's not about saying, I don't believe them. Mm-hmm. It's about saying, where's the scientific proof?
Yeah, and in fact, when NPR or actually when Kamala approached one of the speakers to clarify, because the assumption is that because he was speaking to a group of children at a side event in the Congress, maybe he was drawing stories help children understand things better. So they thought that maybe that was his intention. He was using a a story that the children might be familiar with to make a comparison to scientific discoveries. Right. And he actually claimed that no, that was not what he was attempting to do. That is genuinely what he believed.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Science fiction rather than science.
Yeah, and it's scary, isn't it? When people you position in positions of authority, people who do come from supposedly scientific backgrounds, make these claims, because then you're no longer talking about the layperson saying, oh, my grandmother told me this or whatever, but it's someone that you would generally trust.
Yeah,
that's right. And using your so-called generations of storytelling and beliefs to supplant what you said, Shamila, scientific evidence and proven theories.
Right, and to follow a particular ideology.
That's right. That's the dangerous part, I think, yeah. Well, for next year's event, the organizers have said that they intend to vet speeches, especially those meant for children. The organizers, General Secretary Premendu P. Mathur, said in an interview with NPR, "We've never censored scientists before. We expected them to motivate young minds and speak responsibly. But now each session will have to be closely monitored. We won't allow others to use our platform for their selfish reasons anymore."
So for our next story, we're asking you on Twitter whether you would pay for your kid to walk out on the pitch with their favourite footballer. Let us know, yes, no, I'd rather pay for myself. Tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also WhatsApp us to join the conversation at 018-789-8899.
Meanwhile, here's Space Oddity by David Bowie. You're listening to The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.